It's the E-commerce Master Plan Podcast, here to help you grow your e-commerce business faster and more efficiently by cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and guidance from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello, Masterplan World. Welcome to the final podcast in our 2018 e-commerce growth series. It's been awesome having you all listening to this set of sessions, and I hope you found them super useful. I'm Chloe Thomas, the creator of the E-commerce Masterplan, author, speaker, and advisor focusing on e-commerce marketing. In the 2018 e-commerce growth series is a set of hand-picked interviews to give you ideas and inspiration on how to grow your e-commerce business in 2018. We'll be covering several of the key topics I believe you should be considering. In fact, we've already covered them, and getting into some fascinating e-commerce businesses. It's now all live if you want to go and have a listen. Just find that at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast. And if this e-commerce growth series whets your appetite for really going for growth this year, then make sure you're also signed up to our e-commerce Masterplan Virtual Summit. It's free and packed with videos from experts covering lots of different ways to improve your business. Podcast guest Adam Watson of Hollywood Mirrors is also a fan. As he said, top quality content and tips I had not heard of before. Thank you very much. I have lots to implement. You can get immediate access to that at ecommercemasterplan.com/summit. For now, though, let's get on with today's show. So let me introduce you to today's special guest. Very special guest this week. Now, Cliff Crosby is co-founder and CXO at Emraise, where he works on calculating emotions, and Chief Retail Officer at Performance Solutions, where he helps retailers deliver the best possible customer experience. Now, I saw Cliff speak at 2017's Internet Retailing Conference. I mentioned his session in The Takeaways. That was episode 123-5, if you want to listen. And I knew I had to get him on the show for this e-commerce growth series, both for the exciting work he's currently doing and because of his impressive retail pedigree. Cliff has over 30 years of experience working with some of the best brands in the world. He ran Apple's, yes, Apple's, global premium reseller program, where the focus was on delivering an exceptional in-store experience for customers in over 90 countries. He was Japan country sales manager for IKEA, global VP for Nokia's retail and customer marketing, head of Nike's European franchise program, and the first general manager of Nike Town London. Given that CV, it's no surprise that Cliff's passion is for improving the customer experience in off and online retail. Hello, Cliff.
Hi, Chloe.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Excellent. Well, look, I've just given our listeners quite an overview of you and what you've been up to in the past and where you are at the moment. But how did you end up in this world of e-commerce?
I think it was just really natural, you know, because e-commerce, I don't see any difference in retail between online and offline. And I think, you know, when you look at the definition of retail itself, you know, it's defined by, you know, a route to selling goods to an end consumer somewhere. And I think how you do that is just an extension of retail. So especially nowadays, retail becomes, you know, any channel that works to get your goods to the customer in the right way.
So do you think that makes things easier for the retailer, or, and I'm going to use retailer as someone selling goods to a consumer for sake of argument here. Do you think that kind of development in consumer behavior makes it easier for the retailer to give a good experience, or makes it tougher?
I think it just needs, like always in retail, it just needs you to change to adapt to today's ways of doing business. It definitely makes it tougher in the sense that the customer is more savvy than they've ever been. You know, they have access to all the information. And it just makes it tougher for the retailer because you've got to be wherever that customer shows up. So whether it's online, offline, you know, you've got to be there with the right offer and the right product at the right time. I'm not sure that that's any different to how it's ever been, but, you know, it's definitely today, you know, a case of being really smart about where your customer is and what service you need to provide at that point.
And God, there's so many directions we could go in this conversation. I guess, you know, given this is all about retail customer experience, for you, does it come, you know, what's the starting point with that? Is it the product and then deciding on the right channels and the right experience for each of those channels? Is it about the customer and then putting the right product in the right place with the right service experience? Or is it, you know, brand or something else? Where do you, you know, if you're going, right, I've got a website and I've got a store.
Yeah.
Where do you start? Because there's so many options. Because, you know, you're very into getting the tech right and improving the ROI as well. Where do you start?
But these things, you know, the tech and the ROI and all these things are just part of the customer experience. So I think you have to start with what it is you want to deliver. I mean, product's a little bit, if you're a retailer, you know, product is mainly a bit of a given. You know, when I was working for Apple, I didn't affect the product directly. What I affected at retail was the experience the customer, you know, had when they came to that point of sale. So I think unless you're actually a product person, and of course brands are all about product as well, but when you have that product, the next stage is, you know, what do I want the customer experience to be? And for me, experience is leading, you know, so the first thing you want to get right is that end experience. And especially now, because, you know, when people go to retail now, they don't want to just go to shop. I can do that online. I can just pick up the product online if that's what I want to do. But when I go to a retail outlet now, that's the chance for a brand to deliver a great experience to a consumer.
And after you.
Yeah, so I'm just reiterating that I think the experience you want to give that customer is leading.
And so therefore, the experience starts with what you as a business want the customer to feel and experience.
Exactly. And how you want, you know, that's all the things. It's like I said at the conference about, you know, the emotional side. Mm-hmm. That also comes into this. You know, how do you want the customer to feel? And, you know, how are you going to drive loyalty for your brand? Because, you know, no one nowadays just wants to make a one-off purchase and get out of there unless you're a kind of market trader or something like that. You know, you have to drive loyalty in your customers.
So is when you're trying to work out what the emotional experience or the experience should be, is it, because you mentioned loyalty there, is it from the very first moment they visit the website or they walk past the store, you're thinking about purchase number two?
No, I think you're thinking about making that customer more than one purchase, you know. So, you know, you don't want a customer to just come buy one thing off you and that's the end of it. So I think the experience has to drive partly how you can make this person fall in love with your brand and stick with your brand and, you know, continue on with you as a brand. So, you know, that might, the second purchase, you know, if someone comes into Apple and buys a MacBook, you don't expect the next purchase to be for a few years, probably, but you've still got to deliver that experience. So you're part of the memory of how it is to interact with that brand, you know.
And you mentioned emotion there, which is something which I find really fascinating. It's one of my kind of like guilty pleasures is diving into the world of neuromarketing and emotions and all of that sort of thing. Because you're very much involved with the work you're doing at Emraise in trying to create, turn that emotional piece into not just an idea, but into a kind of a set of stats and numbers.
Well, it comes from, you know, everyone who's worked in marketing over the years has heard of sentiment analysis. So, you know, and this works with IBM Watson, you know, the tool that's probably the biggest tool in the world at the moment that does it. But what sentiment does is it's basically working out positive and negative. So, you know, I can look at words in reviews and I can say, you know, this is mainly positive, this is mainly negative, or there's the dreaded neutral, you know, which comes up a lot. And, you know, I've yet to work out what neutral really means, you know, but it's not a lot you can actually work on. So, you know, with Emraise, we've dived into this world of seeing if we can actually turn the words of people or the text or whatever way you look at it into digging out the actual emotion the person has when they're reading that kind of text. And that's what we've been able to do. So it means we can dig into that. Now, what that means for brands is that, you know, you can see when influencers are working for you on Facebook or wherever, or when your public fans write reviews about you, you can get a real accurate view of how people actually feel about your brand. and then you can target your marketing to it. So it's been a fascination for me, I think, mainly since Nike Town, when we were desperately trying to find out exactly how people were feeling. And we got, they're positive, and these people are negative, and these people are neutral, and we didn't really know what to do. So it's been a frustration of mine over a while of, you know, when you're a brand that says things like you want people to love them, you know, or you want people to be amazed, how do you measure that? You know, so we'll get to that point. So I think, like you, I'm fascinated by trying to find out, you know, the more mass emotional state of people when they interact with brands or even with the news or anything. You know, how are people feeling, and you know, how can we use that as a brand or a retailer to help get our experience better, or you know, manage that experience a little bit more.
So is the emotional tracking side of things, is that very much at the exploration stage right now? It's not a case of we want people to feel this, how do we do it? It's more a case of what are people feeling, do we like that, and how can we get more of it?
We're kind of beyond we trained the tool on news, so we took news right across the world and trained the tool on how to read news. And of course, news is one of the most emotional things going on in the world, really. So we trained it by first starting to look at actual reactions to news that people would have on Facebook and Twitter. And that was the kind of learning. So as the tool worked on a deep learning model, it was initially starting to take all these Facebook feeds. But then we, at a point, it was able to then start to work it out itself. And so now we can predict the news before we even see the reactions, which is the real interesting thing. So if a headline comes out right now, we can tell you how people are going to feel about it going forward. And of course, that is really useful for brands to be able to react. So if I take a real example, say IKEA with the chest of drawers falling over, good controversial one here where, you know, children have died in America because of this. When sentiment analysis ran on that story, it comes out as angry and negative as a story. Or actually, it doesn't even come out as angry because they can't measure that. It comes out as a very negative story. Mm-hmm. But when we ran the actual emotion on that story, it actually comes out as love and sadness. And that's the emotional side, because kids are getting hurt and just sad that it's happening. Because IKEA themselves have put everything in place to try and deal with this. But so really what's happening there is the customer's not, in a sense, blaming IKEA. Yeah. It's just sad about what's actually happening. So for IKEA, it's not the worst story. You know, it's a terrible story, and you have to do something about it. But it's only when customers get angry that they don't come back and shop with you. When customers are just sad, that doesn't mean they don't shop with you. So that's why that understanding the real emotion is a very important thing.
Because that's a huge thing for a brand to understand, isn't it? Because in the 5-10 years ago, in that scenario, that the PR department would be braced for anybody talking about chest of drawers anywhere, and on an offensive for 6 to 12 months trying to deal with what they perceived as the as the fallout. Whereas actually, if it's about sadness and love, then it's, we've done what we should do. We're doing everything we can. Let's change the story.
And you can work on these sort of things. So I mean, there's many other examples. We had an example with GoPro, where GoPro had there was a reporter that was shot by an ISIS sniper, and but the GoPro camera saved his life because the bullet hit the camera. And again, when sentiment analysis ran on that story, it read, ISIS, sniper, terrorist, bullet, all this kind of thing, and read it as negative news. But actually, the real result of that is kind of like joy and love and, you know, wow, you know, amazement that the guy was saved by his GoPro camera. So again, it's a very positive story for GoPro. And you know, they need to work on, well, how can we maximize that kind of news when we get this kind of thing out? So it, understanding the real way people feel about these things is really kind of crucial, I think, to, as a brand, how you should best react to these kind of stories, and the best way to, you know, make the most out of them, or react in the right way when it's not a good story, you know, or make the most out of any situation by understanding how people really feel.
And obviously we're at the beginning of understanding this, but is there anything which the smaller retailer can do to take advantage of this at the moment? Or is it very much a, know that this is coming down the line and keep an eye on it for the time being, for the, you know, for those guys who are like sub half million turnover?
Yeah, and you know, we have a couple of customers that are working with us at that level, but they do things like monitor their social media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you've got a Facebook page on your store, you can also work out how customers are feeling about you as a brand by the mood they come back with, you know. And you can also, we can track negative comments. So if you want to quickly look into your Facebook and just see if anyone's reacting badly to you, you can do that very quickly without having to troll through every single comment. So these sort of ways of just finding out quickly how people feel and tracking the stuff that maybe is not so good and making sure you do something about that are ways that small businesses can work with this as well. So it's not only for the big guys, although I would say because it's tracking lots and lots of data points and the big guys get lots and lots of news, it makes it more useful when you have a ton of news and a ton of social media, of course. But I think everyone's kind of on social media now anyway. It's unwise to not watch what's happening out there.
So I guess the main barrier to entry is that volume, that statistical significance and volume of comment more than anything else.
But I think, and I'm not being salesy here, but our whole idea was to make the tool accessible to everyone. So, you know, we keep it very, very low price so that anyone can use this tool as well. So the idea was to really give it out there because I think it's something that can be used in a really good, positive way by brands. And so we want to get it out there for people to use.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's leave emotion behind, as much as I would like to keep on talking about it and dragging examples out of you. Let's go back to that physical retail space and the straightforward customer experience, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You mentioned about getting the right experience for the customer, and then it's about the, you know, finding the right channels to reach, and that there's no real difference between online and offline. Should you be aiming to create the same experience online as you do offline, or is it a different experience because the customer's looking for something different?
Yeah, this is a very interesting area because, you know, I can say what is a really great experience. So, you know, it can go all from, if I'm in food shopping, you know, say I'm over here, we have Albert Heijn, but, you know, whatever food retailer you want to talk mm-hmm. about. A good experience for me can be just purely, I don't know, I want to grab a bottle of wine. So I go to that store, I can park easy, I go straight in, I go straight to the wine, I see a great offer on the shelf, I grab that one, I go to the checkout, there's no queue, and I'm out there in 2 minutes without having to talk to anyone. That's a great experience because, you know, value for time is just as important to us, if not, you know, one of the most important things nowadays, over having a great experience there. But if I go to, I don't know, if I go to Nike and I want to, you know, I'm starting training for a half marathon and I want to find the best pair of shoes that are going to do that, and I haven't had time to troll the internet for every single option, mm-hmm. then I want to meet someone who's maybe run a half marathon or understands what it's like to do it, is going to ask me about what time I'm trying to achieve, what training I'm going to do, and fits me up with the right shoe that gets me through that whole process. And shoes are a very personal experience. If I go and buy a pair of shoes and I'm sold something that gives me blisters in the first couple of days, I'm not going to come back to you in a hurry, you know? So I think, you know, the experience depends on the product. And, you know, the trick is that whatever I'm going to ask, or whatever I'm going to do, I get the best experience, whether it's a time-based one or whether it's a real product quality one there as well. So, you know, it's kind of, it's a difficult question because, of course, it totally depends on the product and the brand and what's actually needed. But you as a brand have to work out what the likelihood is of these kind of questions coming, and also whether that service is just transactional or whether that's, that service is a kind of desire, you know, and goes to a different level. And, you know, work out this, what you need to put in place to make that the best it can be.
And within one brand, could it be a different experience online to what it is offline?
Yeah,
is that feasible?
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, if you take the Nike example, if I'm a seasoned runner and I only buy Bowerman shoes of a specific type and I want Air Zoom or whatever, I know what I'm after. I just want to go online, find the shoes and click as few times as possible and get them the same or the next day. So that can, you know, that can be just with the same product. It can be a totally different experience depending on the knowledge and experience of the purchaser. And you have to be ready for both.
It's an interesting one, I find, because I think people often, certainly a few years ago, people used to think that online was just the do it quick thing.
Yeah.
And now it seems, you know, and the luxury brands have had such a battle to try and recreate that Gucci experience online, for example. Yeah. And now it seems that everybody's now trying to recreate that experience online. And it seems like a lot of businesses are just following the bandwagon of what everybody says they should do, rather than actually going, what do our customers want us to do? And what emotions should we be making them feel? So it's nice to hear you saying, you know, there's different types of customers and they need a different experience.
And I think that goes back to that first point that you have to decide as a brand and do the work to decide the experience you want to deliver and make sure you get it there. And, you know, we see in the roles I'm in right now, I think people are starting. I mean, there's a huge trend towards, you know, we need to deliver the right experience. And I'm not convinced that everyone is, you know, there yet in terms of what you need to do that. It's great to say, oh, we want a great experience. But that means online, it means everything has to be sharp there for both the quick customer who just wants to buy and the customer who wants to study. So mm-hmm. they've got to, you know, if I'm researching online, which a lot of people do before they go to retail, then to offline retail, a lot of people just use the websites to research, but they still want to go in the store and touch and feel the product and confirm everything before they actually make a purchase. They might even come back out of the retail store after doing that and still buy it online just to get the best price. So you have to think more as a brand and not too much about the actual sales in each area. I'll maybe give you another example that, you know, when we first started with Nike Town, when it opened in, 99, I think it was.
Gosh, was it that long ago?
Oh, shocker, isn't it? And when we first started there, and you think that was really early days of social media and, you know, smartphones weren't really kicking in then either, you know, so this was, you know, for someone that was only 17, 18 years ago, it feels almost archaic compared to what there is now. But we had this first sense that we don't, because this is pre to Apple stores and everything, you know, and we had this first sense that, you know, were the sales all going through the store, you know, so you've opened this massive store on the corner of Oxford Street, you know, Oxford Circus. And, you know, obviously we had massive sales going through there. But the real sense, the real thing that happened over that first year was over the rest of Europe, Nike sales, I think that year they were about 9% up year on year. You know, this was Nike flying high. Mm-hmm. But in the UK, with that Nike Town, the sales were 19% up over that country. Wow. And that was the belief, and I'm sure it was that the influence was coming from Nike Town. So people were still coming down there, shopping in or visiting Nike Town, wandering around, But then when they went back to wherever their home was, the next time they were purchasing, we actually lifted the whole brand with that store. And remember, it wasn't just Nike Town, the store. There was all these big physical events. You know, we had Michael Jordan in London for 3 days. Carl Lewis was there for 7 days. And there was thousands of people coming to the store just to see their heroes. You know, we had so many of the big Nike brand guys at the store. So, I mean, it kind of influenced hugely the kind of trade. And we had retailers on Oxford Street who were, you know, like JD Sports and Foot Locker and all these guys who were selling Nike, who were really worried that they were going to lose all their Nike sales to Nike Town. But in fact, that didn't happen. It happened short term for a few months, and then the whole brand just lifted. Mm. And so all of them did well. And, you know, that's the truth about doing a brand experience in a really great way and investing in that kind of level of experience, you know.
I know. I remember when Nike Town first opened, and it was when I was still at uni, so I was very far from being part of the retail world. And for some of my friends, it was on their list of the top three things they needed to do if they were going to London. It was almost a tourist destination, a pilgrimage, if you like.
It really was. Yeah, we used to sell tourist shirts that were just Nike Down London. And they sold like crazy. But it was that level, you know. It was maybe one of the first elements of kind of true retail theatre. To followed by Apple and everything, of course. But it was when it opened, it was way out there. You know, it was an amazing place.
Okay, Cliff, I've got one last question before we go into the top tips round.
Yep.
Which is, for, let's say our sub half million turnover bricks and clicks business.
Yep.
And if they're thinking, right, 2018, the key thing I need to nail is that customer experience piece. For the future success of my business, where should they start?
As we said, you're really deciding what it is that they want to deliver, and within their category, really deciding, you know, what makes them unique and what they're going to do that differentiates them from the other guys that are selling similar or the same product. Now, a lot of people that I speak to, especially in the role with Performance Solutions now, the big things, and maybe I'm giving you more of the tips here as well, but the big things that we see as challenges are, in fact, the biggest thing, if I put it down to one thing right now, it's retention. It's keeping the good people in their business and motivating these guys to work there, because a lot of the experience you deliver at the end of the day is people. And I think, I truly believe, especially in smaller businesses, that people are your marketing. You know, when people come in and get great service, they go back out and they tell everyone. And you have such a great chance. I mean, you know, years ago, they would go and tell 10 of their friends. Nowadays, they can go and tell 10,000 people on social media in a heartbeat, you know, if it goes that way. So, you know, and the people that are your marketeers are your staff that are actually in your store. So I think, you know, getting that base right, getting them to understand what it is you want to deliver and be part of that, and then them delivering to the customers that you have, is by far the best way you can do business these days, in my opinion.
Excellent. I love the consistency of your answers. I always find it slightly crazy when you know the answers are just, there's so much to say. When the consistency of message, work out what the experience should be, is absolutely brilliant. But you've just, by talking about staff retention, you've just triggered a very, very quick question I want to ask you, another one.
Yeah.
Automated chatbots on websites to do live chat customer service. Good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, you know,
without this turning into a whole other podcast.
Until AI gets to the stage that the customer doesn't know who they're talking to, I think it's a bad thing. I'll give you one example. There's a company over in Holland called Leap, and it's spelled L-E-A-P-P. And if you work out these words, they're kind of part of Apple. So it's Apple with LE put at the front. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they resell Apple computers as they basically refurbish secondhand Apple computers and sell them and phones and iPads back to people at lower prices. And they get students and everything into the market. But what they do is when you go online with their chatbot, when you click on, you come through to a real person. So they have people sitting online and they will come and talk to you online, like on a Skype call or whatever, and help you out. And I think that kind of chatbot, that's a really cool way to go. But the false ones, I think they can help answer a lot of basic questions. And it's definitely a big improvement on having nothing. And these things are programmed to answer the most relevant questions. But I think when it gets to anything difficult, you've got to get through to a human being. Because again, you come down to that experience. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're humans and we like face-to-face connection at some point, which is why retail will never die, because that still has to be part of any brand.
Excellent. Okay, let's go into the top tips round then. And I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So first up, Cliff, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast took Friday off to read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Oh, God.
I know. Tough one, eh?
Probably Richard Hammond's book in the UK, and I'm trying to remember the name off the top of my head here. But Richard Hammond, if you look him up, he's on the fourth version of the book, which is Smart Retail, actually. And I read Richard's first book when it came out in, well, I'm trying to remember when it was. It must have been, it's 13, 14 years ago, so the early 2000s. And he just put together in that, especially the first book, just all the kind of tips and tricks that any retailer should be using to increase their business. So it's good basic stuff about watching what customers do, laying out your store, all that kind of thing. And it's a book that I think was the easiest read and had the most most kind of good ideas, especially for small retailers, because it takes tips from the big guys and puts them into a book that anyone can execute.
Oh, excellent recommendation. Definitely the first time that one's been mentioned on the show.
All right. Let's, it's, I think he's on his fourth edition now, and he's started to add digital into it as well.
Oh, cool.
So, it's good stuff. And he's a good, well-experienced retailer.
Marvellous. Well, next up then, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think when it comes to traffic and the time I spent in Prism and looking at how people, and that was Prism, not Prism.
I was wondering.
we did a lot of looking into how people moved around stores. And the biggest thing we saw was that there is a very, very high number of people. When you measure people through your front door and you think, I get 1,000 in. For instance, we were working with a huge furniture retailer in the US, not IKEA, another one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were finding maybe they got 1,000 people in the door. But certain areas of the store were getting 3, 4% of that traffic.
Wow.
And so we did a lot of work with them to look at how we could push people around the store in different ways. And IKEA have kind of mastered a lot of that with that, you know, love it or hate it, the fact that you get pushed around the whole store by the walkway. But I think that's the thing, retailers, you know, they kind of count how many people came in the front door, but you've got to really look at how many of these people are actually getting around your whole offer. And working out ways to make people shop your whole store and your whole offer is really, it's a big thing when it comes to, if you can just get a few more people to do it, you increase your sales. So we called it penetration back then, you know, people penetrating the store. They would just come in, but they would really get to the back of your store and go through everything. And the more you can drive that penetration, the more you drive your sales. Supermarkets are great. You know, stick your bread and your milk at the back of the shop and off you go. But everyone else needs to think about the same kind of thing, you know.
Excellent advice. Okay, next up, the tool top tip. This might be a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I would say if you don't already use it, look at Slack, which is a collaboration tool that you can use with your team, and you can set up all kinds of subjects in there. And you know, it's just a great way of working. I've used it. I think it started about 4 years ago in the US. It started to spread over to Europe now. All the kind of cool little IT companies use it. There's a kind of free version when you start up, or almost free. And it is a great way of just collaborating privately within your own company when you set up that.
I reckon, I haven't done the count up, but I think Slack has quite possibly now become the most recommended tool on the show.
That's great. That's a great tool.
Okay, the startup top tip. If you met someone this weekend who's thinking of starting an e-commerce business, what would be your first piece of advice for them? I know, it's a big one, isn't it?
Oh, wow. Don't. Oh, no. I think, you know, you really have to think about what you're doing in there to do an e-commerce business. I mean, I think anything that's helping out in the customer experience or starting to help in that way is probably a way to go, because everyone's working on that. But a tip would be really, really get together on what it is you're trying to deliver, who your customer's going to be, and really do your diligence on have you got something that is unique out there and is going to really help people. Because I think, you have to do all that diligence before you kick off in this world. You've got to really understand what it is you're doing and who needs that service.
Such great advice. Look, Master Plan World, you can find those top tips and links to everything else we've been chatting about in today's episode by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, where you'll see a link to this show. Now, Cliff, before we say goodbye, could you let the listeners know where they can find you and Emrays and Performance Solutions on the web and social media if they want to get in contact?
Yeah, well, you can look me up on LinkedIn. Just look up Cliff Crosby at Emrays and you'll find me there. And it's Cliff at Emrays and it's Cliff Crosby at Performance Solutions or PS. But you can find me there. And I'm also on Mac.com. So anywhere there you want to pick me up, no problem.
Cool. And what are the websites for the two businesses, if anyone's going?
Emrays.com and PerformanceSolutions.com.
Marvellous. I'll add links to all of that and everything else we talked about today in the show notes. Masterplan World, you can find those at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, or just go to the website, click on the podcast tab, or use the search box. Cliff, thank you so much for being on the podcast today and for giving us such a fascinating insight into just the kind of like a very few things from your marvellous experience. It's been absolutely brilliant and I wish you all the best for 2018.
No, thanks, Chloe. It's been a pleasure.
How interesting to get to dive into kind of the world of physical retail there. And also those really interesting things that Cliff was saying around the emotional piece and how sentiment can play such a big part in creating that good experience. So customer experience, only going to get a bigger piece. And today we're really talking about that high level customer experience. What do they feel when they leave you? And that could be, they've got the product, it was easy, it was streamlined, a bit like the Amazon experience, or it could be a full-on, they've had that one-on-one purchasing experience. What should it be for your brand? What do you need it to be to keep those customers coming back? It's a difficult one to action, but it's one that could have a huge difference to your sales in 2018. Okay, so that's it for our 2018 growth series. It's now all live. You can listen and re-listen to your heart's content. Do let me know what you think. Of course, the podcasting continues. It doesn't end today. And next Monday, I've got an interview coming up with Sully, who's the CEO and founder of Bomb Tech Golf, who's going to be discussing how to launch and grow using product, passion, content, Facebook and video. And he really knows what he's talking about because he's got a 7 million turnover business that's experiencing 50% year-on-year growth. I know, you're wondering why on earth I didn't put his in the 2018 growth series. Well, I just didn't have space. So another great interview next week for you. And whilst you're waiting for that, why not watch some of the great videos in the E-commerce Masterplan Virtual Summit? It is completely free. We added another 4 sessions a couple of weeks ago, so go on, have a watch. It's all at ecommercemasterplan.com/summit. Have a great week and keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com.